You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Let me start this conversation by saying that I am in no way cool enough, nor have I ever been in my life cool enough to say to somebody, you're dissing me or I'm dissing you. So let me just clarify that I'm using the diss as the beginning of a number of words that for me are about a pattern I watch as relationships begin to roll downhill. Many times the roots of this are very early on in a relationship and totally normal and recoverable at that point. So let's start with the first diss I want to mention out of these five diss that leads us to disaster. The first diss is disappointment. Disappointment is the place where you may look at your spouse and say, man, I didn't expect that from you. I expected more from our relationship. It may be from an action. It may be from inaction. But somewhere along the way, you and your spouse are going to have points in your relationship where you're disappointed. Sometimes it's based in expectations that we have. And I've talked about expectations before, about how expectations are a dangerous way of leading a marriage. So let me talk about two levels of expectation. One level of expectation are the kind of the cultural expectations we have of what a marriage is about, of what any relationship is about. So that expectation sometimes is artificial. It's false. And so sometimes we are caught in the disappointment that an expectation of what the relationship was going to be about has kind of failed us. And let me just be very clear that that's a very normal part of an early part of a marriage. No matter how you go into a marriage, no matter what you think about a marriage, you have mindsets about what's going to happen, about what a marriage is about. And so when those expectations of what a marriage is about fall short, you can feel disappointment. Part of the disappointment that happens there warrants a discussion about your false or your too high expectations. The other level of expectation is more personal. It's when you and your spouse have expectations of each other, of each other's behavior, of how you'll treat the relationship, of how you interact with each other. And when those expectations don't happen, then you have disappointment. That's a different layer. So let's just kind of discard right now, and in terms of those disses, let's discard the whole idea of the expectations about a marriage. Couples have to have some level of disappointment because we build up such expectations of what a marriage is about and what a marriage is supposed to be based on media and friends' marriages and all the outside viewpoints of books and movies that we have and songs that are about relationships. And so then we have to find a kind of a layer of truth about a relationship that is true about the marriage in particular, your marriage in particular. Now, the expectations you have of a spouse, those are different, and a spouse has of you. I find that expectations with each other are fairly dangerous because expectations are usually unilateral. I have an expectation of you, not we have an agreement together. So a lot of times part of the needed switch in a relationship is to go from expectations to agreements. So I might have an expectation of how my spouse is going to treat me, treat the house, treat our sex life, all those other pieces. And when those expectations fail, I have to notice that those were mine, not agreements that we had made. Because if you make an agreement with your spouse that you don't live up to, or your spouse doesn't live up to, that's another discussion. But expectations being one-sided are troublesome. Okay, so what happens in this disappointment? Well, there's another little layer of this that I think is very crucial for our discussion, and that is the fact that most people hit some point in adulthood when they basically quit growing. They grow stagnant. Marriage ends up being one of those markers of where that process often begins because, you know, we kind of settle in to a marriage. And settling into a marriage means that we kind of freeze ourselves in that spot. You know, we've found that person and we've caught that person, if you want to use that term, and we're in this solid relationship. So now we don't have to worry. And so sometimes we don't end up looking for things that are of interest to us. Today on a call, I was talking with my coaches about the importance of curiosity and wonder in people's lives. Well, unfortunately, a lot of times in adulthood, we give up that curiosity. We give up our natural curiosity and wonder, and that also contributes to our stagnation. Another piece that contributes to our stagnation is that we, at the point of marriage, are often locking in on careers. We've got our friend set. We've already got our interest in whether it's music or food or anything else, and we just kind of stop growing and stop developing. That's where the disappointment often happens, because maybe you saw this exciting, vibrant person in the other, in your spouse, and maybe they saw the same in you, this vibrant, exciting, growing person. And then you get married and stagnation sets in and disappointment quickly follows. Now, disappointment has an easy antidote. Disappointment can be solved with discussions and with committing yourself to growth and change, and also watching to make sure that you're not creating expectations that are unfair on your spouse. So disappointment is very mild level. Usually the disappointment part is a normal part of fluctuations in a marriage. But pretty quickly, we get into what are more and more damaging. The spiral downward becomes faster and faster as we go through these other disses. The next diss is disconnection. Disconnection happens because we're stagnant. Disconnection happens because life gets in the way. Disconnection happens for a myriad of reasons, but it's basically the place where each person stops recognizing that the task of marriage is to stay connected. And so they start putting things in between, whether it's a career or friends or children or hobbies or all those other pieces of life that seem to call our attention all the time. Even though in surveys, people say that their number one priority is marriage, I think most people will agree that they don't treat it as if it's the number one priority. And so it's shuffled off to the side. And over time, the connection between people, the physical connection, the emotional connection, the spiritual connection begins to wane. They stop touching. They stop sharing meaningful and important feelings and emotions. They stop sharing their aspirations, their hopes, their dreams, their beliefs, and they begin to grow apart. So the disconnection begins to grow, and often it's out of that disappointment. You're disappointed about something that your spouse has done, and so you begin to pull back a little bit, and the disconnection grows, and it begins to be a cycle where if you're disconnecting, your spouse disconnects, and farther you spread. In fact, disconnection begins to lay the groundwork for where a marriage hits the big crisis. My belief is that we humans are created to be in connection. That is one of our deepest needs, and marriage can either give us that or be painful because we don't get it from it. It's designed to be there. So disconnection begins to create the next pieces that happen, because when you're disconnected, the next piece that falls is trust. So we get to distrust. When we're disconnected, we begin to read into everything. My wife and I were talking about this the other day, of how many spouses of clients that we've seen that have lost their trust because they're wondering, if we're this disconnected, what are you doing, right? And we've talked about how important it is to build that connection, because without the connection, it's hard to be trusting. Now, even if you're connected, sometimes you can have some questions about trust, because there's no other place where you're tying your future and your security to somebody else. And so we have this natural place where we're looking for, how do we trust? So as we begin to have doubts, you begin to question whether your spouse has your best interest in heart, and your spouse is questioning that. You both are questioning that idea. Do we have each other's best interest at heart, or are we in this for what we get out of it? As that begins to grow, the trust begins to fall. Sometimes there are other little things along the way. Maybe you see a text that you're not sure about, or a phone number that flashes across a screen, or an app that you didn't know was on their phone, or an email that you didn't know about, or you hear about them having lunch or dinner with somebody else, and you begin to have these questions. If the connection is there, then there's a place to discuss it. But if the disconnection has happened, it's hard to reach out and say, hey, I have this question about what happened. So we begin to have these places where the distrust begins to grow. Now, distrust often doesn't rupture all at once. Sometimes it does. Sometimes when somebody discovers an affair, the distrust is complete. But sometimes it's those little nagging doubts along the way, the doubts that begin to build. And the more you look for them, the more you find them. And the more you find them, the more you look for them. And the more you look for them, the more you find them. And around it goes until the trust has been shattered and you're left at a place of distrust. Once the distrust has joined in with a disconnection, we clearly slide to the next two, which are so poisonous to the relationship. The next one down is disgust, where you are disgusted with your spouse, the relationship, and who you are in that relationship. You realize that you've lost your place. Your spouse, you don't know what to do with this other person because the way they're acting and the way they're interacting is disgusting to you, and the relationship has begun to gain this disgust. But I want to note that disgust is an attitude, and it really is a layer about hurt and anger, which is really the outward manifestation of hurt. And so you have this whole ball where you begin to read the worst into other people. In fact, it's been interesting for me over the years to watch that somebody will be attracted to a trait that in the end ends up disgusting them. For instance, I had a client years ago who just thought it was hilarious how sarcastic their spouse was. And then over the years began to be disgusted about the sarcasm. And then I have another client who was once attracted to the ways that their spouse interacted with other people, with the kind of the flirtatious attitude, and then was disgusted with their flirtatious nature years later. Well, I could give you countless numbers of people who are initially attracted by something, but when they get to this place where there's disconnection and there's distrust, that same category is seen as disgusting. And then suddenly, we go from disgust, which is really an attitude about behavior, to disdain. And disdain is a place where we find contempt and dislike. It's not just a layer of feeling about how somebody's acting, but it really is almost a push away of the other person. Disdain means that I want to get you away from me because I have contempt for you. It's the rolling of the eyes, and it's the hands on the hips, and it's all of those damaging behaviors where you're saying to the other person, you disgust me. I have no desire to be want to be with you. So let me ask you now to think about those layers. Where are you in your relationship? Are you at disappointment? If you are, then that's a place to begin to have a conversation about whether that disappointment is just about your attitude and beliefs about relationships, or it's a place of stagnation for both of you. That's an easy one to correct. It just means opening your mouth and saying, hey, I think we need to talk about where we're headed. What about disconnect? If you're at a place of disconnect, the antidote is the opposite of that, working on building the connection. Now, I do want to warn you that if you're having a feeling of disconnection, the tough part is you've got to overcome that for yourself and decide to move towards connection for the other person. You have to move and build connection. Many times I have people who tell me, you know, it takes two to tango. Why do you think one person can do it? Well, because one person can begin building the connection. As I talked several weeks ago about the dance steps, you're already dancing a step. So yes, it takes two to dance, but you're already dancing a dance. So let's change the dance and let's find those ways of dancing the steps of connection. That requires one person to begin building the connection. How about at the level of distrust? If you decide you're at the level of distrust, make it your goal to become fully trustworthy. Make it your goal to begin to work on proving yourself worthy of the trust that you might have lost along the way, whether you feel it's justified or not that you've lost that trust. Become the trustworthy person. Decide that you can take that action. Now, what if you decide that you can't trust the other person? I want you to notice the difference between can't and won't. Sometimes we believe we can't trust somebody because we don't want to get injured again. We don't want to find ourselves on the level of hurt again. Trust is a gift. You can give trust, but you can't gain trust unless the other person wants to give it to you. So make yourself trustworthy and then decide whether you need to work to be more trusting of your spouse. That might even include a discussion between the two of you about how to build trust between you, about the ways that you both are willing to be more vulnerable, more trustworthy, more trusting. But that's a conversation. When we get to the place of disgust and disdain, now we've got a bigger issue. So at the place of disgust and disdain, we kind of bring in all the others. We need to make sure that we're working on growth and changing our own lives, of fighting the stagnation that's kind of a natural part, albeit unhealthy part, of adulthood. So we work on our method of moving towards growth and change, of bettering yourself. Then we're working on reconnecting so that there is a frame that we can battle back from that hurt. And then we work on that trust, building the trust, being trustworthy, trying to work on trusting the other person. And there's another piece to it, and that's making amends. Looking back and saying, you know what, I need to apologize. I need to find a way of walking you back towards me and me walking back towards you. And that's about making amends. One of the most dangerous pieces of a relationship are the hurts that build up. As the hurts build up and they're not dealt with, they begin to be like an infection that begins to work through the system. And the antibiotic to that infection is making amends and making changes. It's not enough just to apologize. That's part one of any making amends. Part two is doing something differently. It's not enough to constantly be apologizing for the same behavior. What's necessary is making a change so that same behavior ends. So making amends. Once you're at disdain, it's a bigger struggle, but it's the same path of making sure you're changing and growing, of making sure you're working on connection from your end, of making sure you're being trustworthy, of making sure you're making amends, and hoping that the other person is ready to move back into that connection. Now, let me point out that at no point did I say that you could make your spouse grow, that you could make your spouse connect with you, that you could make your spouse be trustworthy, or that you can make your spouse apologize. Your task is to take on your side of this. Whenever I have two people in my office, both wanting to work on a marriage, it is amazing what they can do because they're able to move forward so rapidly because both want to get back to that. But you may be in a situation where you're the only one who wants to work on this. You're the only one who sees that something has to be done, or you're headed for disaster. And disaster is the last of these disses. Up until then, up until we hit that point past disdain, things are recoverable. But then we hit disaster and it's too late. You can only change what you decide to change. You can't affect your spouse. You can't get connection from your spouse, but you can offer connection. You can't get trust from a spouse, but you can offer trust and you can be trustworthy. You can work on growing and changing. Now, if you need help with this, this is when I invite you to take advantage of the Save the Marriage system. Not only the Save the Marriage system, but you might decide to join me in my VIP program where we do some virtual coaching and extended training on this. This is where you can come back from this. You can learn to grow and change. You can learn to reconnect. You can learn to rebuild that trust and make an apology that makes a difference. Those are the parts, the cornerstones of rebuilding your relationship. Back away from the disaster. Begin to move back up those disses. Make sure you're no longer dissing your relationship and that you're working to restore your relationship. This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best in a thriving, loving relationship, in a marriage you want to treasure. I wish you the best as you work to save your marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.